Hello, who am I speaking to?
Gina Miller. I'm a transparency campaigner and businesswoman.
Right, now, Gina, you've been in the news a lot recently, but I know I've known you for a very long time, and this is really just the tip of the iceberg, because you've done so much helping charities, helping transparency in the city, and you have been an inspiration for so many people, not just women, men, globally, not just in the UK. What inspires you?
Gosh, I suppose I'm inspired to do what's right, or to take on battles when I see things going wrong in the world. Because one of the things I absolutely abhor is people being bullied or people being told untruths. And we seem to be living in a world where dishonesty is becoming a norm, where the bigger the lie, the more accolades you get. And I just think we need to speak up about that. And we need to speak out to ensure that bullies don't get away with being the ones who are buoyant, if you like, and end up at the top of the pile.
Has there been anyone in particular in your life who has inspired you?
Oh, my father was a great inspiration to me, but also because I've always loved books, I've always loved reading of heroes, be it from comic book heroes to, you know, from Indira Gandhi to, you know, the usual Mandela. But I've also loved meeting people where I can see that they have the energy and the drive to want to do something that's innovative, creative, to make the world a better place. I mean, those people that I meet almost on a daily basis, these what I call unsung heroes, gosh, how could you not be inspired by them?
Also, one thing I think a lot of people notice, that you are incredibly multifaceted. I mentioned about your work with charities, transparency. You're a huge transparency campaigner as well. How did you get involved with the transparency work? Because it's something we always want people to tell the truth, and we want to see them as they really are. When did you start to really want to out these people and these organisations?
It's interesting, isn't it? Transparency, I think, has now become hijacked by everybody. It's now suddenly the thing everybody wants to talk about, and it's in every website, every corporate website. There's a tick box for everything at the moment. But that's not true transparency, because my belief has always been that transparency is about shining a light in a dark corner and almost disinfecting things that are corrupt and are bad and are poisonous. And that's true transparency, is taking it to every level of society, of a business, of an organization, of a product, and looking to see how you can get rid of those dark corners and make something clean and shiny. And so therefore, it isn't possible to corrupt it. And that's not what we have with transparency at the moment. And that's what I still believe. I still believe that if we shine a light in dark corners, you see the evil that's there, you see the corruption that's there, you see the conflict that's there. And we just need to make sure that there aren't dark corners for people to hide in.
Because no wonder you're so busy, because obviously there is a lot of corruption, there is a lot of dark corners. And it always seems to be at the very, very top. Do you think that, like, I know that one of your phrases for your charity work is, you know, be kinder than you need to be. Do you think kindness pays?
Kindness doesn't pay necessarily, and it shouldn't be about paying. I think kindness should be the way we live our lives. But I think what's happened over the last couple of decades or so is that we forgot to check in on people as they're getting up the ladders, they're going to places of responsibility. And because nobody's shining a light on them, no one's asking questions, nobody's scrutinizing them, they've just gotten away with more and more. And that's big business, that's responsibility, that's politicians. And, you know, they've become irresponsible, because who's checking on them? And that's partly our job. And that's why I think, as a transparency campaigner, as a civic voice, all of us, we can check on them. Just make sure they're doing the right thing. Just make sure that they're actually being responsible in those positions of responsibility.
People know you mostly now probably from all the work that you've done with Brexit, which seems to go on and on and on and on. Yeah. And on. I know that you work a lot. You still work with the city, trying to increase transparency in the city, and that you've achieved so much there. And also with charities as well. But you're still involved with the smaller charities as well, aren't you? Sort of helping them, the ones who really really can't shout as loud as the bigger ones.
No, I think the charity sector, I mean, there are so many incredibly wonderful charities. But the problem is, because there's lack of governance, lack of rules and regulations, there is also this push towards being bigger and almost running like a business. And in that whole model of big charities, you can see corruption, you can see huge overheads, you can see this sort of black hole that money and donation disappears into. And what I'm saying is quite simple. I think there is a implied social contract when you hand over your donation. You know, in the UK, we're some of the most generous people, and you have a right to know, a basic right to know where your money goes. It's not to say that every single penny of it has to go to the end charitable cause, but you should know what's happening. You should know what's going on with safeguarding, you should know what's happening with the people they're hiring, you should know what they're spending on their offices. You know, I heard the other day, for example, that there was a new charity office that's put up, and they were spending £300 for a lamp on each desk in the CEO's office. And I thought, how is that possible? I mean, you shouldn't be doing things like that. It's not about making it look palatial. It's about doing a functional job so that you can give as much of that money towards an charitable cause. That's what we should be doing. We should just keep, again, it's about keeping an eye on charities, because the big charities mean in the amount of marketing they do, the amount of events they do, the important, impressive people on their boards. The small, heroic community grassroots charities are being overlooked, and they are the backbone of Britain. They're the ones who are ensuring that the vulnerable really do get looked after, and we mustn't forget them.
Have you met anyone who's doing something similar to what you're doing? Because I think the one thing that's always struck me is that, like, I've known you for a long, long time, and I remember when you were standing outside that courthouse, and you were speaking when a lot of other people, let's say just under half the community of the UK was like thinking and saying. But have you ever met anybody who's got the vision that you have, but not got the voice? Because the one thing that I've felt is that you've stood there and you've created an opportunity for other people to stand up and be counted as well.
I have met. I always meet the most incredible people who get on and do an amazing amount of work and create an amazing amount of change. The problem is that when it's issues where there are so many conflicts of interest, or there's so many people who have their finger in the pie, as it were, it's really tough, because you get bullied and you get threatened, and whistleblowers in particular in whatever field aren't really protected as they should be. And because I don't care what other people think, and I really don't mind spending my own money and time and effort fighting, it's very difficult for them to hurt me. And I think that's the thing. I understand that if you're being threatened and you've got to pay your mortgage, or you've got to, you know, mm-hmm. you've got to look after your children, you've mm-hmm. got to buy clothes, it's very difficult mm-hmm. to still stand up when others are bullying you and saying, well, we're going to make sure you lose your job, or we're going to make sure that you don't get that promotion, or we're going to make sure you don't get that contract. It's very, very hard to be strong when others are trying to bully you in that way. Mm-hmm. And my success has meant that I am in a different position. Well, actually, even when I didn't have as much success as I have now, I still refuse to be bullied. I still refuse to be told when I should shut up.
Because you have one quality that you have, I think, is courage, but it's very deep. It's not just a surface courage. It's a real courage. Where do you think that courage came from? Your father?
I think it partly came from my father, but I think I look back on this and I'm not sure. I think some of it is just nature. Mm. I mean, I think I can't remember being any different, and then seeing my father was as a great fighter for social justice was incredible. But I think it's more, I really do worry. It's not about being strong, it's about being worried and fearful, because I worry about other people hurting, and I can't go to bed at night thinking that there are people suffering, or people hurting, or people crying. That upsets me so much.
You have a very strong sense of fair play. I've always felt that about, very, very strong sense of fair play. And I think that's innate. That's sort of like, you either have it or you don't.
Yeah, I think
you see,
so.
What, because your idea of what is fair is different. If you don't have a strong sense of fair play, you have a very warped sense of what is fair. You mentioned about bullying, and you mentioned it about sort of like what inspires you, because you're very, very anti-bullying, and with all the Brexit thing going on with the social media, you have been, there has been at most awful abuse on social media, and actually you've highlighted it, and now more people are coming out and saying how wrong it is, and whether enough is being done about it. But amongst all that, you've also received extremely well-deserved awards, and even two PhDs. You're a doctor now.
I know, it's all very strange. I mean, I never imagined that anybody would want to give me awards like that. But, I mean, it's wonderful. Of course, like anybody, it's lovely to get positive recognition. But I use all those opportunities to then try and talk to other people about the fact that they can achieve this too. Because that's what I think is really important. Because what I'm finding is there has been an increase in misogyny. There has been a lot more bullying of women who are speaking out. A lot more bullying of women of colour in particular. There's an increase in racism. There's an increase of the other. You suddenly, if you're different and you're the other, there is suddenly real division and real hatred. And that's why I'm hoping that whatever I get as an award or acknowledgement or position, then that will inspire other people to also speak up about bullying and against bullying, because it's everywhere. We're seeing it, as you say, it's in the media, it's in communities, it's in schools, it's in societies, it's in places of work. I don't know when we suddenly became this bullying society where we can't just be kind to each other.
Do you think it's when we became patriarchal rather than matriarchal?
There is some, I mean, there is an innate bullying in language in the way we describe women in particular. I mean, you know, you say, so if somebody's a strong woman, you are aggressive, you're not ambitious. Mm-hmm. If you are a woman that speaks out, then you shriek, you don't command. If you're a woman who's successful, then it must be, you know, you slept your way to the top. There's always a way of pulling you down. Mm-hmm. And that's entwined in our society. And that is a form of bullying. That's bullying against women. Mm-hmm. And it's bullying against also if you come from sort of a different world. So, you know, if you have a different accent from outside London, or you don't say your words correctly, or you make a mistake, then you are bullied because you're laughed at. That's a form of bullying. Being laughed at is a form of bullying. And being, brought down a peg. It's that sort of bullying that I find really disturbing, because it's about knowing your place. It's bullying to tell you should know your place.
Also, it's quite incipient as well. It's sort of like, and then you get back into the whole class system, which you think doesn't exist, but actually when bullying, I remember a few things that have been said to me over the years. I certainly haven't received any of the stuff you've received, but has with all the I mentioned about the two PhDs and all the awards you've received as well, actually being able to voice ways to overcome the bullying must be in itself incredibly rewarding. You're able to share what you've learnt, share your courage, share your experience so others can learn from it.
Oh, I think using sort of the lens of my life to help others is really, really rewarding. And I found out a lot of things about myself through this journey the last few years, because, as you say, I've been a campaigner for nearly 15 years now in the investment world and the charity world. And what I've discovered about myself is I actually can stay calm under fire, and that I sort of almost do the opposite, because I listen to bullies. I don't ignore them. I listen to them. And I realize quite often that they have an Achilles heel. And once I've discovered that, I'm able to very calmly and intellectually sort of respond to that. And I think that's better than responding, because if they see that you're hurting, then they've won. And I think it's much better for them to see that actually you're able to stand up to them, but not in the same way. You know, it's a Michelle Obama's thing, when they go low, you go high. I think that's actually what I've learned to do.
Well, unfortunately, I've got to go now, but thank you very, very much, Gina Miller. This is Sarah Tucker from Radio Gorgeous talking to the gorgeous Gina Miller.